I'm not hearing the intro. Oh, there we go. Thanks.
Conservative, you bet. Controversial, right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you've reflected on the communist revolution we've been struggling under since the rigged and stolen 2020 election, you may have been struck by the outrageous hypocrisy of the hate-driven political left. How, you might ask, could it be that all these business and Wall Street types have come to ally themselves with a monstrously evil communist Chinese party? And we're talking here about the Communist Party in China, not the Chinese people. But how could they have come to have ally themselves with a CCP and its other minions in this country, seeking to utterly destroy America as we have known it and turn it into a socialist hellhole where the common people are essentially slaves living and dying under tyranny? We are promised by the left that by sacrificing all our precious rights, freedoms, wealth, and possessions, the world's populations will eventually achieve some kind of earthly heaven. Through communism, we or our descendants will nevertheless one day somehow achieve this true workers' paradise right here on earth. But of course, these sacrifices are only for the common people, as in present-day China, North Korea, and the former Soviet Union, not for the elites shoving this dogma down our throats. While we will be struggling day by day under the slavery that communist countries everywhere have imposed on their populations, our heroic masters, the elites ruling us, will, as always, continue to enjoy the lavish, luxurious lifestyle befitting them, wanting for nothing and enjoying abundance. Of course, those who fall out of favor among these ruling elites will, as always, be imprisoned and or murdered. But this doesn't seem to bother these monsters pushing their totalitarian visions of the world for the world. It's been rumored among communist China watchers that Alvin Zhang, grandson of the late CCP leader Jiang Zemin, and possibly the richest man in the world, that is Alvin, with a net worth of some $500 billion, has been detained by current CCP president Xi Jinping. If this is true, it appears Xi wants Alvin's money and is going to take it. As the former Gyorgy Swartz of Hungary, where he's been declared an enemy of that country's state, who is now known as George Soros, has declared, America is the main obstacle to a just and fair world order, which communist China must lead. Therefore, it's not surprising that we see the so-called left-wing billionaire Soros pouring so much of his vast wealth into the promotion of communism here in America and the rest of the West, funding the communist Antifa organizations and the communist Black Lives Matter movement, among other end-of-America causes. Now, of late, Soros seemed to have soured on Xi Jinping, who, according to China commentator Lei of Lei's Real Talk on YouTube, does not seem to love money as much as George Soros and George Soros' former friend, Jiang Zemin, whose power base was the economic base of China, which is Shanghai. But that doesn't mean George Soros minds totalitarianism, as far as I can see. In studying communism and related forms of totalitarian governments over the years, I've come to recognize key characteristics of these people. These include seething, self-righteous hate, usually disguised as righteous indignation at supposed great injustice. Where communists gain control of a country, this raging hate becomes murderous. It means mass murder, slavery, and terror for the populations ruled by these totalitarians. You see, under communism and other forms of socialism, there is no moral compass guiding people's actions. There is no God or religion other than the religion of the communist state. The ends always justify the means. The left doesn't like debate about their causes. With these people, there can be no debate. They are always correct, and if you disagree with them, you are wrong and must be destroyed. In communist countries, mass murder, slavery, and terror imposed along the way to achieving the never-achieved workers' paradise is always justified. Another communist characteristic is fraud, that is, deception. Lies and trickery are part and parcel, modus operandi of the left. They lie and say you're lying. They engage in hatred and say you are. The trick and the lie are essential to communist brainwashing of populations. Hence, we have the big lie pushed by the CCP serving mainstream media corporations with all their money invested in and paying off handsomely with the rigged Chinese economy. The big lie, they insist, is that election deniers claim Donald Trump actually won the 2020 election. Everyone knows this is a big lie, don't they? Joe Biden won in 2020 in the most free and fair election in history, right? That's why they do everything they can to censor, sue, and or defame you should you dare to question or dispute their big lie trick. As I and many others see it, here in America, rigging and stealing our elections is part and parcel modus operandi of the communist left. If you believe our elections have been rigged and stolen, then you can see this has come to be the most effective means for the communist left of grabbing power and holding it. If you've listened to past episodes of this show, you may know that journalists Mary Fanning and Alan Jones have contended through their website, or through the website, theamericanreport.org, that the left came up with a Russia collusion hoax. That is, that Trump somehow stole the 2016 election by colluding with Russia. And the left pushed it vigorously through their control of the mainstream media and our governmental institutions in order to divert attention from claims that Obama-era U.S. intelligence officials illegally commandeered a CIA supercomputer called the Hammer, originally intended to spy on foreign adversaries, and used it instead to spy and collect data on millions of Americans. More recently, retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant General Thomas McKinnerty has claimed that the Hammer and an elections interference program called Scorecard used with it has been used by communist Chinese and other foreign adversaries to wage cyber attacks across America in recent elections, switching millions of votes cast for Donald Trump and Trump-endorsed candidates to Joe Biden and other CCP-favored candidates. Will Congress ever investigate these astounding claims? Let's go back to the big lie fraud of the political left. Never mind that, for instance, Republican poll watchers were not allowed to examine counting of some 700,000 paper ballots in Pennsylvania in the 2020 election, and that some 120,000 more votes were counted in that state, counted as votes, legal votes, when there are not that many. There are more 120,000 votes counted in Pennsylvania in the 2020 election than there are registered voters allowed to cast them. Never mind that in Georgia, on election day, evening 2020, surveillance video at a vote counting center in Atlanta showed Republicans and the media kept far away from vote counting, which was then suddenly stopped for the night, supposedly due to a plumbing leak. After poll watchers and media were sent home, surveillance video shows election workers pull suitcases of ballots from under a covered table and begin running them through counting machinery several times, at least some of them. Later in the night, many thousands of new votes for Joe Biden suddenly showed up in the vote count totals there in Georgia, giving him the election in that state. Never mind about all the evidence of massive paper ballot fraud in the Arizona 2020 election, discovered by the only forensic audit of paper ballots only there, or anywhere else that I know of, which, when turned over to the state attorney general, Mark Brnovich, he chose to do nothing with. We might see why that happened shortly. Never mind that many Democrat congressional representatives, senators, and computer experts around the country were concerned about the vulnerability of hacking and possible vote manipulation of electronic voting equipment used across this country. And even our federal Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has found 9 major security flaws in electronic voting equipment, making them vulnerable to hacking. Election integrity activist Patrick Byrne has stated that these security flaws are actually security failures for which there are no known fixes. CISA stated they haven't discovered any hacking of our voting equipment. But as attorney Kurt Olson, who's involved in election integrity issues, has observed, CISA has never looked for any hacking. Despite all this, almost no one has been allowed to examine electronic voting equipment, notwithstanding claims by critics that the CCP has been engaging in extensive nationwide hacking and vote manipulation over the past few election cycles. No, American elections have been the most free and fair in history, period, say the election fraud deniers among our CCP-serving mainstream media corporate types and politicians. And you, stupid common people, have no right to have true forensic election audits. Just trust the people now in charge of our elections. And of course, by now, much of the evidence of this hacking has been destroyed on those voting machines. And as you're going to hear in the next few minutes, the travesty of hopelessly corrupted elections in Arizona is no coincidence. As the, for many of us, real Arizona governor, Carrie Lake, has observed, the Mexican drug and human trafficking cartels run Arizona. Because Lake was appalled at all the corruption in that state and vowed to take on the cartels, their widespread bribery and other racketeering there has brought many state politicians, business people, and judges under the cartel's control. And Carrie Lake was simply not going to be allowed to become governor. To hell with the will of the people of Arizona. In fact, the corruption is so bad in Arizona that the state cannot function without the continued infusion of billions of laundered cartel money, according to investigative attorney John Thaler, whom we'll hear more from shortly. For me, Arizona is a standout example of the sickening collusion among corrupt politicians and government officials, including present and former intelligence community officials. The CCP, which supplies the ingredients for the fentanyl flooding across our borders, and the Mexican cartels, which manufacture the fentanyl. We have, as former Trump administration official Cash Patel calls them, government gangsters running our country now. Before we go further, let me include a third key characteristic of the communists and their sympathizers and servants. And that is, as I stated earlier, outrageous hypocrisy. This is why you see all these rich and super rich people in our country seemingly worshiping totalitarian communism as supposedly the best thing for the masses. And also, of course, their captive markets in the communist countries for these capitalists. The rich seem to stupidly believe that they will stay rich, powerful, and free under a vaunted New World Order totalitarian world government modeled on the Communist Chinese Party regime. Well, it's true that Communist Party officials and elites in China are very rich, some fabulously so, as they are the ones privy to the riches of the state they control. But as people watching the CCP have observed over and over, communist clique currently in power can suddenly turn on their wealthy opponents, confiscate their wealth, and imprison or murder them. For example, it's been reported, as I stated earlier, that the CCP's ruling rich elites, like Jiang Zemin's grandson, Alvin Zhang, mentioned earlier, have amassed enormous wealth under the gigantic money laundering operation with the Western financial and business elites the CCP has become. I believe it was the YouTube channel China Revealed, which seems to have ceased operating, that estimated that these CCP elites have moved as much as $4 trillion worth of cash and assets out of China, at least partly in anticipation of the next worldwide hecatomb, that is, mass die-off, which could result from a CCP bio-warfare attack along the lines of COVID-19, only much more lethal. Let's get back to what's been going on in Arizona, where the midterm elections in that state last year resulted in numerous bizarre and mysterious election anomalies that resulted in all the pro-Trump MAGA, or Make America Great Again, conservative candidates for major offices losing to radical leftist ones. Those of us on the MAGA side cannot help but see the mass disenfranchisement of Republican voters in Arizona last November as election and vote fraud. But as usual, what can only be perceived as a disgustingly corrupt judiciary has repeatedly refuted and denied Kerry Lake's attempts to dispute the election and expose this fraud. Now it appears that an investigation into large-scale racketeering in Arizona has also uncovered significant evidence of election fraud there. On February 23, I think it was, last week, Jacqueline Brager, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, representing attorney John Thaler's racketeering investigation team, spoke at a joint legislative hearing on election integrity in Arizona and provided a list of people, including Soros-backed newly elected Governor Katie Hobbs. And these people are alleged to be involved in widespread racketeering in Arizona. Many want to believe that these allegations made by Thaler and his team are the beginning of the end of the corrupt politicians and elections officials in Arizona. But I have serious doubts it's all going to make much difference. As I said, we've been largely taken over by an evil cabal of these government gangsters working with the CCP and cartels to force their Marxist revolution upon us. So we are unlikely to see significant relief from these monsters in our corrupt, compromised, or otherwise intimidated judiciary. This would seemingly extend right up to our own Supreme Court, where it appears the Trump-nominated justices are among those compromised and are intimidated to the point where they want to avoid any significant investigations or rulings on election fraud. I'd love to be proven wrong about this, but so far, that's what I see. And I keep asking myself, don't these Trump-nominated justices realize that their recent rulings on things like Roe versus Wade or the First and Second Amendments to the Constitution are all going to be for naught once the complete takeover of our country by the communist left is achieved? Anyway, getting back to Arizona, as I've mentioned, the racketeering corruption allegations made there last week at the joint legislative hearing on election integrity have caused quite a stir on the internet. We're now going to play several sound bites I've recorded directly from podcast postings from the Lindell Report and Brandon House Live TV programs on frankspeech.com. These are excerpts from hours of interviews with attorney John Thaler, whose team has been for years investigating fraud in Arizona and numerous other states, as many as 20, he thinks at least 20, on behalf of undisclosed clients he works for. By agreement, as I understood it, Thaler states he cannot identify his clients, but it has been implied that these may include financial institutions who've lost money due to the alleged money laundering and other fraud in Arizona and other states. Now, at some point in these interviews, he does state that there have been numerous individuals who have been caught and prosecuted in these different states for some of this fraud, but he has a great deal of material on it, and it doesn't appear that a whole lot of them have across the overall racketeering operations. Not that many of them have been caught, I mean to say. A little more background here. I'm still not clear on all the details, but from what I can infer or heard during these interviews with Thaler, he married a woman and had a child with her, who, along with her family members, has been involved in some of the racketeering and fraud alleged to have occurred in Arizona. I believe he stated that she came to him during his investigation and revealed this. She is now apparently in hiding with their son due to death threats against them, and Thaler says he's had attempts made on his life. Thaler also states that he has made the materials discovered in his investigation available to the FBI and former Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, among others. Wow, the FBI? The same agency controlled by people who have supposedly been investigating the Hunter Biden laptop matter for more than 3 years now with no legal action? And Rhino Doug Ducey? There's another winner for election integrity and justice for you. You may hear some things on these sound files twice, since due to my somewhat hurried capturing and editing from the many minutes of these interviews with Thaler, I was unable to eliminate all of the duplicate recordings. But among the most significant highlights will be the allegations that newly elected Soros-supported Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs has accepted bribes from the cartel through money laundering of mortgages for properties owned by her corporations. And that Arizona is now, as Thaler said, dependent on billions of cartel laundering money to keep the state functioning as it has been, which includes low taxation. Starting off, here's what's called a Frank clip of audio posted February 24th from frankspeech.com's Brannon House interviewing Thaler. It's titled "Documents Linking Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs to Bribes in the Form of Phony Mortgages She Has Registered to Her Corporations." Play soundbite one, please.
This is what I think the elected officials got yesterday, and I'm scrolling through here. What are these deeds of trust? What is all this documentation that is in this document you gave out to the legislators yesterday, which you've seen that we get a copy can show here? What is all this?
Well, there's a lot of documents in there, but there's two types of documents, essentially. One of them, for example, is a series of documents on Katie Hobbs, which show a series of deeds, trust deeds, that she's allegedly received as a result of loans. The problem with these is twofold. One, the notarizations on a number of these deeds are falsified notarizations. They match up with a whole assortment of falsified notarizations that we have discovered over the years. So we can compare signatures, and that's what we do. She has ones that compare perfectly dead on to that. So that's one issue. Secondly, we look at signatures. And if you look very carefully, and it's not necessarily easy for the average person to tell, but if you look very carefully, what you will find is that even the signatures of both her and her partner are not the same signatures. So even a number of the signatures on there are questioned document signatures.
So does that mean someone was doing fraud in their name?
No, it can mean some. Well, let's put it this way. It certainly is the case that somebody was doing fraud in their name. But if you're asking, is somebody doing fraud in their name that they don't know? No. And here's why there's a problem with this. Because if you then go to Ms. Hobbs' documents filed with the Arizona Corporations Commission, such as a number of LLCs and corporations that she's worked with or founded or been a part of, we also see that the document signatures and the document handprinting, especially for the documents that were not simply uploaded, you know, computerized into the system, but were hand filled out, also match the phony handwritings that we have in the rest of the schemes. So we have now, you know, probably, you know, say it's about 10,000 phony LLCs and corporations. And they're not phony in the sense that they're filed, but they're phony in the sense that they're used for the money laundering. When the handwritings that are in those companies match up with the handwritings on the deeds, then it's very hard to say you didn't know anything about it.
Now, do you have any handwriting experts that can look at these signatures?
We don't do anything and don't present anything that didn't go through a forensic question documents expert.
Can you tell me about your expert's qualifications?
Our expert is Linda L. Mitchell. She's one of the top forensic QDEs, question document experts in the country. In fact, she is the only QDE who is certified by the state of California to investigate election fraud. One of the things that she does is looks at ballot signatures when they come in for mailed in ballots. The state of California trusts her to do that. We trust her to do this. She has now looked at, I think, over 10,000 pages of documents at this point.
Like I said, whether or not anything comes of this, given the seemingly hopeless corruption across our country these days, is anyone's guess. Here's another Frank clip, also posted February 24 from that same interview with Thaler, titled, "Attorney John Thaler Describes How the Initial Investigation Led to the Discovery of Additional Crimes, Including Bribery, Tax Evasion, and Corruption." Please play soundbite two.
So how did you initially discover all this? Is this where a family member comes in?
Yeah. One of the things that happened was that there was a family member who was directly involved in the paperwork for this. As you can imagine, I mean, we have now uncovered, you know, what we think is probably upwards of 35,000 transactions that are fraudulent transactions. The amount of paperwork involved here is huge, and the number of people involved is not, you know, one or two people. But I was directly involved and had a relationship with one of the people who was directly involved, very, very much unbeknownst to me. And, you know, that was a blessing and, of course, a curse. The curse was that she was involved. The blessing was that it allowed me to ask questions and ultimately to get answers to it. Yesterday in the testimony, the discussion was about two individuals, Brittany Chavez and Donna Chavez. Brittany Chavez is the one who we're talking about mostly. Brittany and I actually got married in April of 2016. We had a child in December of 2017. And it was in 2018 when I was looking through documents with the recorder's office that I found documents relating to her that clearly also related to the Midwest transactions that I'd been looking at in 2014. So, and from there, well, and from there, it just kind of went off the scope, because once you find, once you know what you're looking for and you know what the documents are, you know, that you're searching for, especially nowadays with the databasing, we could find far more and more and more documents. And that uncovered not just at the time, money laundering activities through these properties, but it also uncovered, payroll theft. It covered life insurance fraud, auto insurance fraud. It covered bankruptcy fraud, obviously tax evasion that goes with it. And then ultimately that led us to the obvious, which was, with all this going on, were there officials, public, you know, both elected and appointed, who are also being bribed? So for the most part, up until really a couple of months ago, until really the after the 2022 election, we were mostly concentrating on payroll theft and life insurance fraud. And the money laundering. And, you know, just to make this more clear, Brittany in November 2019 came to me and came to one of my colleagues when it became clear what her involvement was. And at that time, she asked us for WITSEC protection, which for your audience out there is federal witness protection. That's what it's called. It's WITSEC protection. And in order to get that, in order to even apply for that, you have to be willing to inform the U.S. attorney of every criminal activity you've been involved in. Well, Brittany was not at the time willing to tell me or my colleague all of the activities she was involved in, but she did provide us a number of documents. She provided us a portable hard drive. She provided us several flash drives, which contain a lot of the evidence from which we then launched a deeper investigation into this.
Lastly, here are excerpts from the Lindell Report podcast posted February 28 on frankspeech.com. Wherein Mike Lindell joins Brandon House.
Well, let's bring in John, because I got a couple questions right off the bat.
Okay. John, welcome to the Lindell Report. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Go ahead, Mike.
You know, you go ahead. I'll chime in. I got a couple questions, but I want the audience to catch up.
So okay. So we're going to skip by a lot of the stuff we dealt with on Friday night and last night, because what we're really trying to get to, John, is the election part of your story. The election part was an afterthought. Is that right? You just kind of stumbled on some of the election things that you're concerned about?
Well, we had a number of issues. And I heard Mr. Lindell earlier talk about Shasta County. In 2007, I wrote a book called The Decline and Fall of California. And the third chapter in my book was called A Most Undemocratic State. And a lot of it concerned voting fraud in the state of California. So I'm very familiar with the issue, and I was familiar with the issue back then when I wrote about it. Our investigation was basically about money laundering, and most of it involved private parties. It wasn't even involving public officials, elected or appointed. So when the election fraud issues came up, which first came up in October 2020, they were pretty minimal. They were exceedingly important in terms of issues, but they were minimal in terms of our investigation. When the 2022 right. election occurred, we saw so many flaws in the way the election was performed, including what happened within Maricopa County, that we actually went and looked more deeply at what we had and how it might be connected to election fraud.
Right. Hey, John. Okay. I want to stop you there, because I want to ask about three questions on this. So what you've seen when you just said in the 2022 election, you've probably seen deviations in behavior. You also seen deviations like, why isn't a judge looking at it's unconstitutional, this stuff. 60% of the counties, the machines didn't work, where they couldn't even accept the paper. All the stuff we had in our lawsuits. You had Katie Hobbs not even bothered to go to a debate. I mean, just all bizarre stuff that doesn't make sense. There's got to be a hidden agenda. I want to ask two things. I've been saying for a long time on this show, and even publicly, I always said to myself, why didn't, when the Democrats had all three, the House, the Senate, and the presidency back in, I think it was 2010 and stuff back then, why didn't they make all the legals or the illegals legal to get their votes? And then I thought to myself, you know what? It's called a laundromat. You have to have a way to launder billions and billions of dollars of cartel cash. It's not like the 1980s where you can roll a wheelbarrow into Miami and wheel it into a bank and say, hey, I want this high rise. I want this car. Okay. And I told people that. I said, I believe, and it was true then, that they were paying cash to illegals. So they're avoiding paying billions of dollars in federal taxes and state taxes for employment. So you're paying cash to these illegals, and you're even underpaying them because they're not going to tell on themselves. You know, they're not going to tell on the employer. So, but then I thought to myself, still, even with that, as I know it so much in Arizona, California, Colorado, and even Texas, but these were all these laundromats of illegals paying them cash. Well, I always said to myself, there's got to be more and more ways to laundry money. It's too much money to do that. And then when I heard what you had going on, I'm going, wow. You know, your thing that you found is billions of dollars. I think I read somewhere or seen it, $7 billion just in the state of Arizona. My question to you is, can you explain? I couldn't wrap my head around, how does the scam work? To the best of your knowledge, how does the scam work with the mortgage company, a fake mortgage company? I want to follow the money. How does the money become clean? You know, for people, our audience out there, most of them know how a laundromat works. You take dirty money and you turn it into money. Even if you have to pay tax on it, it comes out clean, where it means you can spend it. And you've gotten through like a, usually in businesses, you overreport your earnings to make it, and you add to cash to the overreport, and you just overreport, and you can put cash in the bank by the tens of thousands of dollars. So can you explain how this laundromat works?
Well, yeah, I'll explain it to you in two different ways. And then I'll make a kind of a larger comment about it in terms of the numbers, because I think the numbers are important. And I know you guys will understand this. The first way that they're laundered, and this has been going on in the country probably since there was property, since there was real property to purchase, is that monies that are unclean are put through a process of purchasing properties, usually single family residences. So, for example, if you are a drug supplier, you know, this isn't about dealers on the street level, but if you're a supplier and you're taking in millions of dollars in cash, you know, you can't take this to your bank. You're not stuffing this under your mattress. You're not taking a couple of thousand out to go to Costco to buy your groceries. You have to find a place to put it, and a safe place to put it. The easiest way to put it anywhere is to go out and have a real estate agent go and purchase a single family residence for several hundred thousand dollars. That's usually done in the name of a straw buyer. So it's not your name that's on the deed. It's the name of a straw buyer who has their name on the deed, purchases the property, holds the property for a year or two, and then sells the property. When that property is sold, there's a new buyer that comes in. There's a mortgage company usually for that buyer. The monies all go to an escrow company. The escrow company then usually wire transfers money to a bank account, and you've now cleaned the money. That's one method of doing it. Another part of the method—
Hold it right there. I want to ask you something right there. So when the money is bought, When the dirty money, the cash money, buys the property, there's no regulations there to check where the money came from?
That's exactly right. In fact, one of the problems, and it's probably one of the main reforms we need to have, is that unlike banks, escrow companies do not have reporting requirements. So if you took in, and it doesn't quite happen this way, but if you literally took in a suitcase of cash to an escrow company, they wouldn't have a reporting requirement to the IRS. If you took that into the bank, they would. But going further than that, it's much harder to pay off a banker to take your cash and not put it on a report, because the cash still shows up in the bank's records. At right. any kind of an escrow company, you could pay off any escrow officer and they could just say it came in by check or it came in by transfer. There's no checking and balancing of this within the regulations.
Gotcha. Okay, go ahead. Keep going. Yep, got it.
Okay, so that's part one. Part two of this is that a lot of times we find that the money laundering involves property developers. If a developer is going to go in and purchase, or not even purchase, a build, say 100 or 200 houses, and of course, Arizona especially has had a huge housing boom in this way, then what cartel people will tend to do, what people laundering cash will do, is they'll go to the developers and make deals with the developers for, as you said, overinflating the values of things. So if they paid $1 million for concrete, that would be now $2 million. If they paid $5 million on shingles for roofs, that would now be $7 million, and so forth. So they overinflate the prices that their alleged vendors are providing to them, and the cash is literally put through a vendor system like that. That's a very common method in the United States.
Right. Okay, I want to ask you that. So I got a wheelbarrow full of cash, and you're doing that through the developer. that developer or that even the vendor, doesn't the vendor, when they go in and make a deposit at a bank, somewhere along the line, they don't, doesn't someone say, where'd this cash come from?
Ah, but the problem is that it's not cash at that point. Because what the vendor does is he sends a bill to the developer. The developer wire transfers money from cash. Usually the cash that goes to the developer comes from a loan. So what happens in the first instance is that the developer will go out. The developer doesn't have, you know, $20, $30 million to build a property. The developer has a certain amount of money. And just like a mortgage that an individual takes on a house, a developer does the same thing. They finance their projects. So what usually happens is that you create a fake financing company, a privatized financing company. And then what happens is the cash that goes into the financing company would be considered a capital contribution to that company at its startup. So then that company loans the money to the developer, who then, of course, pays the money back out to a vendor. What happens, you know, rather than giving somebody a pile of cash, if you give them, in essence, what is a mortgage, I mean, you see this all the time with contests that say, we'll pay off your mortgage. Well, what if the mortgage itself is not a legitimate mortgage? So you've put, say, 10 or 20% down on your house, but the mortgage that comes in to pay the rest of that buyer or that seller off is not real money. It's money that comes from a falsified setup mortgage company on paper, a mortgage company that then pays the money in. So now you own your house. On paper, it looks like there's a mortgage, hence a trust deed, except that you don't really owe anything and there's nobody actually collecting. So you now have the equity in the property as the bribe.
So that person, are they, could they possibly be, they don't know and they're getting that people, but obviously if they come to them, is at their current place they live and they say, hey, we'll give you a piece of property over here. Or do they, or how does that part work in your, the investigation you've done?
Well, what we have found in our investigation is something different than what a lot of other states do. In the state of Arizona, what we have found is that most of the compensation is not paid when somebody is in the office, but when somebody is wanted for the office. So what happens is that if you want to be, just take a judge, for example, you know, the salary for a judge is not low compared to most Americans, but it's very low compared to what most lawyers earn. So if you want to get a judge on your side, what you would do is you'd have to go to the judge and you have to convince him to give up his $500,000 a year practice to take $100,000 a year salary. And the way you're going to do that is to give him incentives or her incentives to become a judge, which means that they're going to get rid of their practice because they can't have a practice when they're a judge. And you're going to compensate them through this system of, it could be a refinance, what looks like a refinance on their property, or have them buy a whole new property and pay off and pay the mortgage for them. And then they don't owe on the mortgage. And we usually find this, as I said, at the beginning of the person's career, so that once they're in the system, they're already compromised.
Is it possible that a politician, we'll just use crooked Katie Hobbs for an example. So Katie Hobbs, and I'm not saying that because of your things. I call these politicians that I know are not good like that all the time. So here's Katie Hobbs. So Katie Hobbs, could it be that, let's say it's a police officer, a judge, whatever this mortgage scam would be. Is it possible that person came to them and said, hey, we'll do this for you if you go to the judge, that they could play plausible deniability? I didn't know I did anything wrong. You know, they said that if I went and did this, could they use plausible deniability? Or could that really have happened? Or is that so? Or would they... You know what I mean? I mean, could that happen? Could a person say, hey, I didn't know? You know?
Well, let's put it this way. In the cases of a number of the politicians, let's leave outside judges for a moment, because judges have a very simple and straightforward way that they become one. But in terms of politicians who have to really actually have a campaign, actually have to finance the campaign, judges tend to be reelected no matter what. It's just that there's very little, you know, opposition to a judge running for reelection. But for a politician who has to gain money, one of the things that we look for is not simply the deeds. I think one of the things that was a bit of a misnomer from our presentation was that, look, we had 20 minutes to basically show people what we were talking about. That's a very limited amount of information to show people in a very limited amount of time in a hearing that we had every intention of understanding was going to become hostile at some point. So, but what we have done, which is much broader than that, is we don't just look at the deeds. We also look at their corporations, their LLCs. We now can get documents from the Arizona Corporations Commission, including annual filings, the original filing, et cetera. And so we look at a whole number of things. We look at those things. If there's other public documents available to us, we'll look at those. Then we'll look at other things that may be a little more private. But in the end, what we've looked at is a whole stream of documents. And as you said, we use a lot of deviation methods to determine whether or not we even think we have something before we even go further.
Okay. Well, then my next question is Katie Hobbs. You know, I've been watching. I have not seen any of your stuff, but I've heard that someone said, "Mike, Katie Hobbs might be involved." And I don't care if she is in your what you've found so far, whether she's knowing or unknowing, and you could be subjective or whatever. You could say, "Well, if she's in on it or she's done something, we don't know how much of it is illegal or not." What do you have on Katie Hobbs?
Well, I think to answer part of what you just said, because I think it's very important for the audience to understand, you know, when you say, does anybody not know, chances are no, that wouldn't be the case. There's too much of it and it's too pervasive for somebody right. not to know that this is going on. We did actually, in one case of a particular judge, we actually confronted the judge with the deed problem and said, can you explain this pattern of deeds? And, you know, the response from the judge was basically to scream at us, call us names, tell us we had no business looking at their deeds and they were thinking of suing us and maybe filing criminal charges because how dare we look at their public records?
Did you say all that aside, how do you really feel, Judge? You know,
yeah, it's kind of exactly what we said. I'll give you another example
okay,
real quick and then
okay.
I'll answer this.
Obviously, you're hiding something, you know.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
Let me go a little bit further with this because there's one more step in this. In one case, which was a lawyer who worked for the city of Phoenix, he was a lawyer for the city of Phoenix Police Department. When we looked at, he actually contacted me. This is about 2 years ago. He contacted me about a matter that was related to my investigation. So, you know, just so people know, people did know about the investigations as they went on. Various people did call. This was a lawyer for the city of Phoenix Police Department who called me. One of the things that we do is we vet these people because we don't know where they come from. And if I've never met them, I don't know anything about them. When I went to his deeds, what I found was a series of deeds, four deeds over a 6-year period with him and his wife, where three of the four signatures of him and his wife on the deeds didn't match up at all. So clearly he didn't sign these deeds, even though they're in his name and his wife's name. On another call with him, I confronted him with this and I said, can you explain this? I think he then threatened to call the FBI on me for looking at his deed. In terms of the racketeering activities, in terms of buying properties and selling properties and possibly the bribe scheme part of this, yes, we believe there's at least 20 states involved. And that's because we followed things like phone records. We have, I think we've said before, about 8,000 pages of phone records and about 24,000 entries of both phone and cell records. And we've kind of followed where the calls go, you know, what states they go to, et cetera, what counties they go to. And then we've gone to those counties and looked up their documents. Very concerning to us is some of the things that you played on your tape a little while ago with what the officials said. You know, all those elected officials got it right on. The ability to hack into machines is universal. It doesn't matter whose machine. It doesn't matter how sophisticated they think their machine is. That is just a fact of life that we have to live with and something we all have to protect ourselves from. It's gotten so out of hand, partly because computer hacking and computer infiltration has become so sophisticated. So what they said was all true. One of the things that we looked at is we looked at swing states. We said, all right, let's look at the 2016 election. We look at the states where President Trump, you know, won by small margins, usually less than 3%, at least on paper, you know, regardless of the fraud, areas where he won by less than 3%. Because our feeling on it is that there's a lot of fraud you can do. And you mentioned some at the top of your broadcast. But basically, to get away with it long term, you've got to have short margins of victory or loss to make it work long term. So short term, you could throw an election, but long term, it can't be so obvious over and over and over again.
100%. So you're talking my language there.
Right. So one of the things that we did was we said, all right, we're going to look at where the phone calls come in and out of. We're going to look both at those counties and we're going to look at those states. And what we found was oftentimes the frauds that we were looking at in terms of both the laundering and the bribery went to both states and to counties that were susceptible to fraud in a way that could change the outcome of elections. Now, that doesn't mean it did happen that way, and we certainly weren't asked to do that. But one of our main concerns was is that you had somebody, one of the people on that video, I forget which congressman it was, made a very astute observation. For a Democrat, it was extremely astute. He said, what if you simply make small changes in one or two counties in a presidential election in one or two swing states? It does not take 20 or 30 states to change the results of an election. It takes three or four counties in key states, and then you have an entirely different election result.
Right. This is how the mafia works. It's how the cartels work. You don't get to, you know, because that was another question somebody asked me. Well, in this laundromat, why would the cartels give their dirty money and it ends up with the politician or whoever it is? I said, no, they might not get all of it. They might get paid off, but then that money becomes clean money. Maybe they get 20% to be part of this laundromat, or they're getting 100% because they got to give them favors later that help them do the rest of the laundromat, right?
Well, let me blow your mind with something here, because in Arizona, especially, this is a symbiotic relationship for a reason. It's not even as much. You need to think about it a different way than you've ever probably thought about it before. You know, what you said is true, which is if somebody comes to you and says, I'll pay off your mortgage, I want you to run for judge or run for state senator or run for state house, for sure, they expect things in return. No different than what a lobbyist does. You know, we're going to fly you to wherever and we expect you to vote on a bill. So it's not any different than that. But in Arizona, there's one unique difference, and that is the finances of Arizona, the ability of the state to survive financially is now totally, completely dependent on illegal money. And I want to say that again, cartel money is what makes the state work. It's what keeps the taxes low. It's what keeps everybody in business. If you took out the cartel monies tomorrow, if you sealed the border, so to speak, if you didn't let drug monies play out to some degree, you would literally bankrupt the state of Arizona. So now what you have is rather than the cartels, in a sense, going to politicians to get things that they want, you've got politicians in an awful position of trying to keep a state alive with reasonably low taxes, things that attract businesses to it, that have to rely on illegal monies to keep the economy going.
I find it hard to believe that Arizona could not survive economically without the illegal laundered cartel drug and human trafficking money. Though I'm sure there would be some economic pain as the state adjusts to a more legitimate economy, such as higher taxes. But anyway, I mentioned former Trump administration official Kash Patel earlier. He's a well-known political commentator now with his own television show called Kash's Corner on NTD television. I watch and listen to it often as part of my $5 monthly subscription to theepictimes.com, which is the internet side of the Epic Times daily newspaper, of which NTD is their internet television arm. Kash Patel has a new book out titled Government Gangsters. I haven't read it yet, but I am looking forward to doing so. As I said, it's obvious these government gangsters now substantially control our country. They don't totally control it. Biden, who obviously works for and serves the Communist Chinese Party and is hopelessly compromised by them, is not able to control our entire government. Many sections of it operate more independently. And I don't think this has made Xi Jinping very happy, because I think the CCP does want a lot more out of Biden than they are getting. And Biden is walking a fine line there where he's trying to look like he's really looking out for America, whereas in fact he's more often looking out for the Communist Chinese Party. But he can't do too much too soon. And as I also said, it's obvious, it's anyone's guess, if anything will come of these startling racketeering allegations in Arizona and at least 20 other states, as John Sather said, including, of course, corrupted elections. I'm sure hoping that the now Republican-run U.S. House of Representatives will eventually investigate these many problems with our elections. It could be one of our last means of saving the country. But we will have to see. That's all for another show. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted soon on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com. Look for us live again 2 weeks from now in this same time slot. Have a great rest of your day and evening.